News. I'm Liz Palka. An Ethiopian Airlines Boeing 737 passenger jet to Nairobi, Kenya, crashed early Sunday, killing all 157 people on board, according to the country's state broadcaster. The flight carried people from at least 33 countries, including 8 Americans. Kenyan Transport Minister James Makaria says nearly a quarter of the total passenger number were Kenyan nationals.
Among the most affected, as you may expect, is Kenya, which had about 32 passengers on board out of the 149 passengers.
The flight left the airport in Addis Ababa just after 8:30 a.m. local time before losing contact with the control tower just 6 minutes later. VOA spoke to Ethiopian Airlines spokesman Afrat Begasha over the phone about the condition of the aircraft.
And the flight has no technical report and nothing was reported, and the technical fault was just speculation.
Begasha tells us the plane itself was new and the pilot experienced. Activists in Russia have kicked off demonstrations against a new bill. Critics say is part of an effort by President Vladimir Putin's government to increase state control over the internet and facilitate censorship. The bills call for the creation of a system that would protect Russia in the event of a cyber war, while also filtering internet traffic to the country. The health minister of Tunisia has resigned following the deaths of 11 newborn babies within 24 hours at a hospital in the capital, Tunis. The health ministry and state prosecutors have opened investigations into the mysterious deaths. More international headlines on voanews.com. This is VOA News. Passengers and crew members on board a Turkish Airlines flight bound for New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport experienced extreme turbulence over the Atlantic Ocean Saturday. 30 people suffered bumps, bruises, cuts, and a broken leg before the flight landed safely. Passenger Syed Nikaj spoke to WABC and says people were being tossed all over the plane.
I've seen blood all over, which I had one of the ladies next to me, she really fell down from her seat on the floor, and all her back was completely blood.
Dozens of ambulances lined up in front of the terminal to quickly treat the injured coming off the flight that left Istanbul for the 10-hour trip. Hundreds of protesters took to the streets of the Algerian capital on Sunday. Demonstrators opposing a fifth presidential term for their 80-year-old president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika, as he faces mass protests that pose the biggest threat to his 20-year-old rule. Bouteflika is expected to return to Algeria on Sunday after 2 weeks in a Swiss hospital. A source familiar with the matter telling that to Reuters, the ailing president has rarely been seen in public since suffering a stroke in 2013. Algerians, desperate for jobs and angry at unemployment, corruption, and an elderly elite, show no sign of backing down, despite Bouteflika's offer to limit his term after the election. U.S.-backed fighters could soon resume an offensive against the Islamic State group in the last area they control in Syria, that according to an official on Saturday. A Syrian Democratic Forces spokesperson adding the battle against the extremists is expected to take 3 days. SDF said they have about 2,500 fighters ready for the battle in and around the eastern village of Baghouz, where IS fighters still have a presence. The head of the World Health Organization denounced a deadly attack Saturday on an Ebola treatment center in eastern DR Congo. Gunmen attacked the center at Butembo, North Kivu province, killing a policeman and wounding a health worker, the latest in a series of attacks. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, speaking after his 4-hour visit to the Butembo clinic, told reporters that the violence in the region was undermining the early progress they had made in fighting the outbreak. The Butembo facility only reopened last Saturday after an attack by gunmen the previous Wednesday forced its closure. I'm Liz Palka, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The aircraft was on the route from South Africa to Addis and it continued to Nairobi this morning. And the flight has no technical report and nothing was reported and the technical fault was just speculation.
An Ethiopian airline plane crashes minutes after takeoff, killing at least 157 people on board Sunday.
We are battling with the court decision because what the PF wants to achieve is to bar me from standing to retain my seat in Ron. And I think by and large, we cannot allow andam and methods to be the order of the day. Let people follow the law.
A Zambian parliamentarian challenges a decision by the Speaker of Parliament in court.
Between 30,000 and 42,000 foreign fighters from some 120 countries have traveled to Iraq and the Syrian Arab Republic to join groups affiliated to ISIL and Al-Qaeda. Those numbers include a significant proportion of children.
And a United Nations expert finds an increasing use of children by violent extremist groups. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Ethiopia Airlines has established a commission to investigate its crashed plane that left all 157 people on board dead Sunday. Officials say an Ethiopian Airlines flight en route to the Kenyan capital Nairobi from the capital Addis Ababa crashed shortly after takeoff Sunday morning, killing all the people on board. The government-run Ethiopia Broadcasting Corporation said the flight that went down near the city of Bishoftu, about 47 kilometers from Addis Ababa, carried passengers from 33 countries. Officials say the flight lost contact with Bole International Airport just 6 minutes after it took off at 8:38 local time. For the latest development, I reached Afrad Begashau, spokesperson for the Ethiopian Airlines.
To specify the accident, we cannot say anything today. Otherwise, it will be speculation. However, we set up a team to investigate the accident and a team of comprising from civil aviation and different units are going to investigate and traveling to the site. This morning at around 8:36, the flight departed from Addis Ababa Airport and around 8:44, it lost contact.
I heard everybody on board perished. Is that the case?
It's true. It's true. It's a very sad moment for us and very tragic. Yes, it is true that all on board are perished.
You said that investigations are underway to find out what caused it, but I'm sure you are aware that there are speculations that perhaps the plane was faulty and that they did not tell the pilot that it had some technical problems. What can you tell me about this?
Yeah, this time that we know that the aircraft is very new, 4 months old. It arrived to Ethiopian Airlines Springs around November 15, 2018. Very new, young, and the pilot was very experienced, and the aircraft was on the route from South Africa to Addis, and it continued to Nairobi this morning. And the flight has no technical report, and nothing was reported, and the technical fault was just speculation.
Now, so where does this lead Ethiopia Airlines on this sad day?
It's very sad for us, very sad. And the entire board management and the employees are very sad and in a deep, tragic day. Very, very sad day for us. Yes, it is. We cannot bear the incident. Very, very difficult time.
What message is the Ethiopian Airlines sending to the families of the deceased?
Please convey our condolences to our passengers, especially those who lost their lives and families and friends, and very deepest condolences and sympathy to all of them. And we are very, very sad, and we wish the comfort comes from God. Thank you.
Afrad Begashau is the spokesperson for the Ethiopian Airlines. He spoke with me from Addis Ababa.
Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio recently delivered a speech outlining his vision for his West African country at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government in Boston, Massachusetts. The vision, the president said, includes implementing measures to root out corruption, building a sustainable economy, and entrenching the principles of good governance in Sierra Leone. For more, I'm joined live in the VOA studio by Mohamed Rahman Soare, the Sierra Leonean Information Minister, who was with the president when he outlined his vision. Hello, and a warm welcome to you, Mohamed.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's quite a pleasure being here.
How are you doing so far?
I'm doing very well and very, very bone-chilling cold.
I understand that. So tell me, Mohamed, you were with the president. He outlined his vision. What else did he say in outlining his vision to the Harvard Business School?
Well, the president has identified human capital development as a major plank in public service delivery in Sierra Leone. So the visit to Harvard was important to that. He wants to be able to make strategic partnerships to explore the possibilities of peer learning so that Sierra Leone could benefit from the repatriation of best practices. The president is concerned that our traditional grammar school system of education is not the way of the world. ICT is at the head of everything we do. And Harvard is reputed. They are in the global, they have a very unassailable global reputation for being at the cutting edge of ICT and innovation. So we were in Harvard to share experiences with them and to drink from their well of knowledge and experience. Don't forget, President Bio has set up a directorate of science, technology, and innovation. And at the head of that directorate is a very proud alum of the MIT. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we had quite a good time. We met with administration of MIT and Harvard. We met with faculty members. All of them are very excited to support, collaborate, and to help Sierra Leone in our journey to a bright new future for our country.
Now, President Bio himself schooled here. You have an MIT grad who is heading the technology department in Sierra Leone. So was there a transfer of knowledge discussion to have an exchange of ideas between your government and MIT?
That was definitely the major plank. That was one of the major things we achieved during visits. For example, you now have Jala University College, mm-hmm. That has been twined. It has been brought on to one of the major flagship programs at the MIT, the JLO. So Jala University students and MIT graduates will begin exchange programs, both at faculty level and students level.
Okay.
We believe there will be very positive ripple effects of that on our country, because it will not only help broaden the worldviews of our students, it will also ensure that they are able to have a deeper and better understanding of the critical challenges facing the country. So, I mean, that's a big win on its own. Mm-hmm. Again, we are talking about issues around teacher training, motivation, and a whole lot of other things. So President Bio was able to put his case fairly and squarely. He gave them his report card of what he has done in less than 1 year to transform the country. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the anti-corruption drive. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that we have to end impunity, because he's been very passionate about that call, even in spite of the fact that he's aware that corruption will always fight back. But he has an irrevocable commitment to pursuing corrupt public officials and to sending a loud and clear message to those of us serving in government that this is a new day. Impunity will no longer be a hallmark of governance. So that was very important. He also spoke about his economic transformation agenda. Remember, we inherited a country on the brink of mere bankruptcy, the worst economy in living memory. Many have wondered that we've been able to take it out of the woods in less than 6 months, implementing a free quality education program from pre-primary school to the completion of senior secondary school. Many have wondered how we have been able to pay salaries to public sector workers without recourse to bank lending or overdrafts. Many have wondered why we've been able to, you know, mobilize the resources. But to many of us who are aware, many who followed President Bio during his campaign days, I mean, should not be surprised, because he continuously harped on the fact that He will ensure effective and efficient management of the state and its resources. So these are some of the things he's brought to bear on his presidency. That is why in the first few months on his ascendance to the presidency, he ensured two executive orders that dealt, one, with fiscal discipline, second, with mobilization of resources.
But some of his critics are saying that all this is being done just to make them unpopular. Even the anti-corruption drive that the president has embarked on, they said, is just persecution against them, just to make them unpopular and just to go after them to break the resolve of the opposition, just to allow him to do whatever he likes to do. How do you respond to that?
Well, Peter, my response is very simple. If people call running after them efforts made by this government to improve life for the average Sierra Leonean a witch hunt, we are quite happy to be doing that. Because all of the policy pronouncements are pro-poor policies. These are policies that will ensure that we create a better life for the generality of our citizens. Look at free quality education, for example. I mean, there are many Sierra Leonean kids who had dropped out of school or who did not have the opportunity of darkening the walls of a school simply because their parents cannot afford something like $20 to keep them in school, you know. So President Bill has already solved that problem. Little wonder you have a high increase in school enrollment figures. So what he loses sleep over right now is to how to ensure that these processes and programs are sustainable. So if anybody calls that a witch hunt, so be it. We are talking about drawing a line under impunity. I mean, it's simple. Corruption has choked the development process in our country. Corruption is the reason why kids go to school before now and they sit on the bare floor. Corruption is the reason why pregnant women, lactating mothers, and children under 5 years cannot access basic essential drugs in hospitals. Corruption is the reason for the massive youth unemployment. So President Bio is drawing a line under corruption. Apart from the efforts of the Anti-Corruption Commission, there are commissions of inquiry going on so that we are able to draw a line under corruption and impunity. This cannot be a witch hunt because in just less than 6 months of the effective operations of the Anti-Corruption Commission, we've been able to recover in excess of $1 million, and he has pledged that to building a medical diagnosis center for all Sierra Leoneans. Not many can afford to go to India, Ghana, and other places. Is that a witch hunt?
Right. Talk to me about the issue of establishing a commission to investigate act of graft or corruption in Sierra Leone. The opposition, the APC, said they are not going to cooperate with the commission and that it is ineffective and that even the Sierra Leone Bar Association has questioned its authenticity and questioned the grey areas to which they think the president wants to come after them. How do you address some of these concerns that they have?
Well, when the president mooted the setting up of a commission of inquiry, we had all kinds of outlandish arguments just to shy away from the reality of a commission. There were arguments that they were going to run after particular tribes, particular regions, particularly the APC. But our argument is simple. I mean, when people steal or loot state resources, when people misappropriate state resources, they do not do so for their tribes. They do not do so for their political parties or their regions. They do so for themselves and their cronies. So the commissions are about democratic accountability. It is looking into the stewardship of those who had a unique and singular opportunity of leading our great nation from 2007 to 2018. We are not running after tribes. We are not running after anybody. I mean, when it all started, part of the argument was you have to bring permanent secretaries to book. Already, the commission has started bringing before it permanent secretaries who are persons of interest, right, who are key witnesses. And besides, even some of President Bio's appointees remain persons of interest. You never know, they might be called in to testify, right? So it cannot be witch hunt. It is not discriminatory. It's not selective. And by the way, let me tell you, all of the persons of interest who served in the previous administration are being represented by legal counsels. So it cannot be that they are not cooperating.
Briefly talk to me
about... It is in their best interest to cooperate. I mean, this is an opportunity for them to exonerate themselves and where they establish their innocence to be extolled for diligent and, you know, effective service to the country. So it's an opportunity to come out there and show yourself as a patriot who gave your best in the service of Sierra Leone when it was needed most.
Right. Recently, the president met opposition leaders from all political parties. Curiously, the APC said they were not invited. Secondly, talk to me about the anti-corruption bill that the government seeks to put in parliament. What does it seek to do? Because some people are also saying it's persecution all the same in another form.
Well, recently, just last week, His Excellency President Bill met with all 70 registered political party leaders in a state house. Amongst them was the APC, the main opposition leader. They were represented by the deputy chairman and leader. And, you know, you see there were photographs going all around the place. I mean, they were very happy that the president called them in to discuss, you know, what they considered issues bordering on cohesion, issues bordering on democratic sustainability, and other related issues pertinent to governance. They were quite happy. It was a frank opportunity. President Bill promised, I mean, he would make that a regular feature of engagements with political party leaders. So they all left the meeting very happy. But I'm sure outside the meeting, you know, their members must have put pressure on them, so they came out saying all of the things they said. But, I mean, it remains important that President Bill said all of the actions we have taken since coming to government are in the very best interest of Sierra Leoneans. And he enjoined all of them, including the opposition, to support those progressive policy decisions taken by government. He even called on them, come and work with me. But I saw in their press release, they said they are not ready to play a part in government. They will not work with government. So you see, this is the point. While President Bill is trying tooth and nail to bring each and every piece of the jigsaw together in the best interest of our country, you have a group of people who believe that if they are not in power, you know, it's either their way or the highway, which is really a sad day for our democracy. Let me use this opportunity to call on the APC to continue to support government, you know, like other progressive party leaders in parliament are doing. This is for the love of our country.
We'll come back to that. Mohamed Rado Sore is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He joined me live here in the VOA studio in Washington, D.C. A Zambian opposition lawmaker is seeking a legal challenge to a decision by the Speaker of Parliament, Patrick Matibini, to declare the Rhone constituency seat vacant. Chishimba Kambuili, the parliamentarian from the constituency and a former information minister, says the Speaker violated the constitution by illegally declaring his seat vacant. The decision prompted the Electoral Commission to schedule a by-election for the seat on April 11. This after Kambuili was accused of joining the opposition National Democratic Party, despite being elected on the ticket of the ruling Patriotic Front Party. For reaction, I read parliamentarian Chishimba Kambuili in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
The speaker's action is illegal under the law. But you may wish to know that politics in Africa are usually with the interference of the executive. The speaker was put in an awkward situation. He's been pressured for a long time to try and declare my seat vacant. But he tried to withstand the pressure, but finally gave in. Now, if you look at the speaker's ruling, first and foremost, one, the PF and I are in the courts of law over two issues, one, unlawful expulsion from the party. And in their counterclaim, they have issued a claim that I have crossed the floor, meaning, therefore, that there's an active matter in court. And when there's an active matter in court, nobody can have jurisdiction because that's sub judice.
Mr. Kambuili, are you therefore saying that the decision taken by the Zambia Electoral Commission to organize election on April 11th for your seat as by-elections with other by-elections is illegal?
It's illegal because our law states clearly, the Electoral Act, once the Electoral Commission of Zambia announces the date of the elections, nominations shall be taken after 30 days. Now, between, say, the next week, last week, and, say, the next week, does that amount to 30 days? It's only 7 days. So it's illegal. So they wanted to do a quick one so that they abrogate the provision of the law. But I am well ahead of them. My legal team is well ahead of them, and we've stopped this election.
You initially said that it appears the Speaker of Parliament is unduly being influenced or pressured by the powers that be. What evidence do you have?
I have proper intelligence. I have people right in State House. I have people right in Parliament who tells me everything that they plan. The Speaker of the National Assembly, I have challenged him that on Friday, before he declared my seat open. He was at State House, and he was told that he has to declare this seat vacant at all costs. He has not responded to whether our claims or allegations are true or not true, because he knows that's a fact. I have intelligence. Whatever they do reaches me. Mind you, I am one of the five people that started PF. We bailed PF, and President Edgar Lungu, the current president today, was not even there.
Don't you think you could possibly be putting their jobs in jeopardy by saying they are your people and they leak information to you?
I don't mention them. How do they know that this is the person I'm talking about? Because when you have intelligence, you don't disclose your intelligence. So, out of 20 people, how is he going to know that this is the man who gives me information? I have been taught by a man who was a politician from top to head, and I have got very good intelligence. And in African politics, without proper intelligence, then you are not a politician.
So what do you think are the prospects of your legal challenge to the Speaker's decision to declare your own seat vacant?
My brother, if the law, our own constitution, says the Speaker can only, mark the word, can only declare a seat vacant on the basis of crossing the floor, when a member of parliament writes to him that I've left this political party to this political party, without that you cannot. I'll leave it to you to decide. That's one. Secondly, you and I know, I think even in America, once a matter is in court, it cannot be decided by anybody apart from the courts, because that's sub judice. You are not even allowed to discuss a matter that is in court. That's what our constitution says. So it's not about my assumption. It's about the law. It's about the legal provisions of our constitution and our subsidiary laws. So I'm basing my conclusion on the law, and that's why we have gone to court, so that the right people that have been given the responsibility to interpret the law can interpret it.
So where do you go from here?
That's a story for another day. At the moment, we are battling with the court decision, because what the PF wants to achieve is to bar me from standing to retain my seat in Ron. And I think by and large, we cannot allow andam and method to be the order of the day. Let people follow the law.
Chishimba Kambwili is an opposition member of the Zambian Parliament. He spoke with me from Lusaka. A United Nations expert finds the use of children by violent extremist groups to fight their battles is growing and becoming internationalized. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva on a report on children in armed conflict submitted to the UN Human Rights Council.
Special Representative of the Secretary General for Children in Armed Conflict, Virginia Gamba, considers children to be the primary victims of war. While children continue to be recruited as soldiers by governments and rebel armed groups, she notes the emergence of several disturbing new trends. She says the transnational nature of violent extremist groups has seen the emergence of transnational recruitment and involvement of children as foreign fighters.
It is estimated that since 2011, between 30,000 and 42,000 foreign fighters from some 120 countries have traveled to Iraq and the Syrian Arab Republic to join groups affiliated to ISIL and or Al-Qaeda. Those numbers include a significant proportion of children.
Gamber says a growing number of children are being detained for their alleged association with violent extremist groups that operate across borders. She says these children, who have been exposed to some of the worst atrocities, are treated as criminals instead of as victims. She says they should receive help to become rehabilitated and reintegrated into society. Last year, she says there was a significant rise in attacks on schools and the use of schools for military purposes, thus denying children access to an education. She says children are afraid to go to class because they may be exposed to abduction, recruitment, or sexual violence by parties to conflict. The UN expert says child abductions in situations of conflict also have risen. She warns the abductions frequently are a precursor to other violations. She cites the example of Nigeria, where the militant Boko Haram has abducted hundreds of schoolgirls. In many cases, she says, girls were specifically abducted to be used as human bombs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. But first, I'm still joined in the studio live by Mohamed Radu Swari, the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. So, Mohamed, before we left, we were talking about the president outlining his vision in Harvard and the local development back in Sierra Leone. Now, talk to me about recent council elections with the opposition rejecting the poll's outcome as fraught with irregularities just for the Electoral Commission to tilt in favor of the ruling party.
This is a sad day for our democracy. You know, anytime the opposition does not have things their way, you know, they crucify the outcome. It's either rigged, it's either subverted or something. But I mean, any keen watcher of Sierra Leone's political system could clearly have seen this victory coming. I mean, in Freetown, I listened to declarations by very, very senior members of the APC. One of them was a former councillor in the same ward. He declared for the SLPP, right, in the firm belief that the APC has used, misused, and dumped them over the years, you know. So that effectively pierces a knife through over the traditional sense of strongholds. You know, when people vote, they think about what is in it for them. Mm-hmm. In less than 1 year, this government has introduced a free quality education, right? The people of Tonko Limba are benefiting from that. This government has committed to bringing 4,000 medical health workers on the payroll this year. But the Tonko Limba community is going to benefit. More school structures are being built. They will benefit from that. And I'm sure they enjoy the general decorum and the commitments laid out by this government. That is why they are comfortable to have voted. I know the election was a nail-biting finish, but there's some people emerge on top. Right? I mean, we are, you know,
they said you use government machinery, you use government resources, and you use some thugs, supposedly, to intimidate and harass their opponent, their supporters from going to the polls to vote.
That is not true. That is not true. Let me say this, and let me emphasize it. The SLPP believes in the rule of law. We believe in the core tenets of democracy. Our government is a product of a democratic outcome. There is no way we could at any point along the line subvert the same process. But I know for the APC, as long as they lose an election, it has either been rigged, it has either been subverted, or people have made unholy compromises, right? But I like to use this opportunity to congratulate and thank the great people of Tonko Limba for having seen the light and for giving the SLPP a mandate. We want to guarantee them their votes will not go in vain.
Before we go to the next programming, talk to me about the anti-corruption bill. What is in it, and what does the government seek to achieve by this? Because you are battling an issue of non-cooperation from critics of your administration. So, what is in it? What does it seek to do? And what do you want to achieve by this bill?
I'm not aware of non-cooperation, right? I know that members of the former administration have faced anti-corruption commissions. The latest one was the brother of the former president for evading taxes, so he had to return to the anti-corruption commission amount. That is not my idea of non-cooperation. You have others who are being represented by their legal counsels at the various commissions of inquiry. In any case, you know, I'm sure the APC members are smart. They know that the best thing to do in such circumstances is to put in a representation. Otherwise, other provisions of the law could be invoked. I am not going there. Talking about the draft anti-corruption bill, mm-hmm. We have a situation where over the years, people who have misappropriated state resources are made to give some back to the state, and they still walk around free, you know, as big men. Society celebrates them. This is not the generation of role models we want for our kids. We want to make corruption an expensive enterprise. We want to make it unattractive. So the new law seeks, amongst other things, to even ban people for stipulated periods depending on the level of graft for which they are convicted. I mean, that's very important. It will send a loud, clear, or ambiguous signal that this is a new day. Corruption is no longer trendy. It's no longer fashionable. The other bit, fines will be increased. Forfeiture provisions will be enforced. You know, so those are some of the key planks in this new anti-corruption bill currently before Parliament. I know Parliament is also very aware of the debilitating effects of corruption on our country. And so they will use their good senses, irrespective of political party inclinations, to pass this bill. Because this is probably Sierra Leone's last opportunity to get over corruption and give our country a new lease of life.
Mohammed, we'll continue with this when you come the next time. Mohammed Rahman, sorry.
Thank you.
Is the Sierra Leone Information Minister. He joined me live here in the VOA studio here in Washington, D.C. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In football, the 2018 African champions, Esperance of Tunisia, became the first team to qualify for this season's African Champions League quarterfinals after a 2-0 home win over Harare of Guinea in their Group B match on Friday. In Group A, Algeria's CS Constantine and the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe both dropped points and will have to wait until the final group games to try and clinch a last eight place. The two finishers in the four groups advanced to the quarterfinals. In Friday night's Group B match, Marian Hassan Asoko conceded an own goal midway through the first half to put three-time African champions Esperance ahead against Guinea's Horoya. Esperance needed a second goal to be sure of success, and indeed it arrived 7 minutes from time through Cameroonian midfielder Frank Com. Victory for Esperance guarantees they will top the final standings. Orlando Pirates of South Africa were surprisingly held 2-2 at home by FC Platinum of Zimbabwe. In that group, Esperance of Tunisia has 11 points and has thus qualified. Horoya of Guinea have 7 points, Orlando Pirates of South Africa have 6, and FC Platinum of Zimbabwe have 2 points. In the other Group B match in South Africa, a Platinum side without a win in 6 qualifying and group matches drew with Pirates, the 1995 African champions. Group C leaders CS Constantine of Algeria surprisingly fell 1-0 at home to Club Africain of Tunisia and surrendered an 8-match unbeaten record. Burkina Faso-born Bissarou Compaoré scored on the stroke of halftime as the visitors avenged the home defeat by the Algerians in Group C 2 months ago. The Algerian side had won 6 and drawn 2 qualifying and group matches before hosting Africain. Now Group C, CS Constantine has 10 points, TP Mazembe 8, Club Africain 7, and Ismaili of Egypt has only 2. In the same group, Ismaili of Egypt dropped out of contention for a quarterfinals place after being held 1-1 at home by five-time champions TP Mazembe of DR Congo. Despite the setback of Constantine and the failure of Mazembe to secure maximum points, they both remained likely to field the top two positions and qualify for the quarterfinals. A possible path for Club Africain into the last eight would be to trounce Ismailia in Tunisia next Saturday and hope Constantine suffer heavy loss away to Mazembe. Alternatively, if Mazembe fail to win in Lubumbashi, the Tunisians will progress by winning at home. And in athletics, Kenya's Duncan Koech and Karolina Nadolaska of Poland will head their respective fields at the Hanover Marathon on April 7th. The 37-year-old Koech was third in Hanover last year, but holds a 2 hour 7 minutes and 53 seconds lifetime best set in Cologne in 2012, the fastest in the field. Samuel Maswai, another Kenyan, is expected to mount a stiff challenge. Maswai clocked his 2 hours, 8 minutes and 52 seconds lifetime best at the 2013 Berlin Marathon, where he finished 5th. Most recently, he finished third in Vienna last year. Five other runners with sub-2.10 credentials have also been announced, and they include Kenyan Edwin Kimaiyo, Paul Kangongo, and Joseph Atleting, Ethiopia's Elebachu Wale, and Anne Gabes of Germany. On the women's side, Nadolaska is the fastest of the entrants, courtesy of the 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 32 seconds personal best set at the Osaka Women's Marathon in 2014. But in her most recent marathon appearance, last year's Nagoya Women's Marathon, the 37-year-old finished a distant 14th. The field also includes Ethiopia's Tigista Mewiye Gebeyahu, whose biggest career win came 2 years ago at the Zengzu Marathon. Kenya's Rachel Matuga will also be among the favorites. The 31-year-old finished second at the Hafai Marathon. Finally, in tennis, Serena Williams defeated former world number one Victoria Azarenka 7-5, 6-3 to reach the third round at BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells. Williams, in her first tournament since a quarterfinal exit at the Australian Open, needed more than 2 hours to get past her longtime rival. Britain's Johanna Konta beat Taiwan's Haishu Su Wei 6-0, 6-2, but Dan Evans lost 6-7, 6-3, 6-3 to Stan Wawrinka. Williams, winner of 23 Grand Slam single titles, will play Gerber in Muguruza in the third round after the 20th-seeded Spaniard beat American Lorraine Davis 6-1, 6-3. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. And you're hearing from Seyi Shay featuring Runtown with Gimme Love, Timaya featuring Alikiba with Number One Follows in second, and Simi with Loving the third. And then we top it off with David Lutalo with Sweet. Enjoy.
Gimme love, oh, baby, gimme, make her calm down. Gimme love. Give me love, oh, cause I really need it right now. Put me to work all day, put me to work all night. Nobody can do it better, make me feel alright. Anything you wanna do, I'm down with you. Anytime, any day, or more I go show first. Cause you're sweeter than honey. Baby, you deserve a trophy. This kind of thing gon' make me marry. Long as you know, treat me corny. Give me love, oh, give me love, oh, give me love. Give me love, oh, give me love, oh, give me love. Give me love, oh, baby, give me, make her calm down. Give me love, oh, cause I really need it right now. Give me love, oh, baby, give me, make her calm down. Give me love.
Show up and handle business. Love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business. Love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business. Love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business.
You should let me hold you, you should let me love you. And when you fall in, say let me go catch you. I know your friends don't want me around you. They know nothing, they don't understand you. My baby not my band, I'm out to elevate. And when she deal with me, I concentrate. That's why I tell them I don't get to wait.
Baby, one yo, what thing you give no money can buy. Even if you not jarao, I go throw it, throw it, throw it. Baby, one yo, what thing you give no money can buy. Even if you not jarao, I go throw it, throw it, throw it. Give me love. Baby, give me, make her calm down. Give me love, oh, cause I really need it right now. Give me love, oh, baby, give me, make her calm down. Give me love, oh, cause I really need it right now.
drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business. The love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business. The love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business. The love is a drug and I'm addicted. Pull up, show up and handle business.
Oh, my hand tonight. Radio on, I'm feeling nice. How you are looking strong? Go dance with me all night. I really wanna tell you what's on my mind. I'm giving you love, yeah. Giving you love that you're the one. Whenever you want me, oh baby, just call me on the phone. Wherever you are, baby, you're the one for me, don't you know?
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Some news reports coming out of Zimbabwe last week were indeed baffling. It was first reported that many Zimbabweans had abandoned the use of the loaf of bread with tea for the breakfast, the reason being that the price of a loaf of bread has risen from $1 to $2, and many of them could not afford it. The price of bread had risen mainly because the government had imposed taxes on some wheat products, and the cost has been transferred to the customers. Zimbabweans were appealing to the government to rectify the situation. While that was going on, another report came out at the end of last week. The government of Zimbabwe had engaged a lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. for $500,000 to seek relief on sanctions. This report caused some concern among Zimbabweans, and that should be the case, because it seems paying a Washington lobbyist $500,000 to seek sanction relief is a clear misunderstanding of the current state of policy making under the Trump administration, particularly when it comes to sanctions. Sanctions has become a diplomatic and economic tool in the Trump administration to punish or favor many nations around the world. But in the case of Zimbabwe, the original sanctions were imposed because of the land policy, when under the initial policy, land were seized from white farmers and were not given compensation. In that situation, the U.S. and many other countries, particularly in Europe, impose sanctions on Zimbabwe. So unless that policy is changed, it is hard to see what a lobbyist could do in Washington, D.C., except if that policy has a direct link or line to the White House or even the Oval Office. But that is unlikely. This kind of misunderstanding may be due to two facts. First of all, lobbyists are very effective in promoting their interests in approaching governments, particularly weak and soft and small governments, to tell them how much they could accomplish for them in Washington, D.C. Some African countries in the past have engaged them, and some of them have succeeded, but in many cases, it has been a waste of money. Secondly, Africans should see what is going not only in the United States in particular, but around the world because of the difficulties of imposing sanctions today in the Security Council, which is legal under the Charter. Many governments are now imposing unilateral sanctions. These unilateral sanctions are not binding on member states, but those applying these unilateral sanctions often resort to what is called indirect sanctions. That is to say, if a country does not comply with the unilateral sanction, those applying unilateral sanction will then impose sanctions on some of the states. For example, currently, European Union is faced with the problem in terms of the trade with Iran. The U.S. has imposed unilateral sanction in Iran. The European Union does not agree with the sanction, and they are now trying to find a way how they can pursue trade with Iran without United States imposing sanctions on them. So in this situation, why should Zimbabwe spend $500,000 for sanction relief? Instead, African Union should set up a task force to study this issue of unilateral sanctions, because sooner or later, they can affect them. Unilateral sanctions, quite recently, have crippled the economic and welfare of many states, and there seems to be no relief. So unless they do that in the diplomatic side in Addis Ababa, I do not see what the lobbyists can do in Washington, D.C. So African states and policymakers must be aware when they are approached by lobbyists asking for them to be engaged to change policy in Washington, D.C. The situation has changed drastically under the Trump administration. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Shao Gang Chang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, quality beats do not rattle. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News.